Listeners to the ongoing New Dimensions Public Radio interview series know that over the past 20 years, we have spoken with many of the most important and forward-looking people on the planet. Our purpose is to expand the landscape of possibilities, challenge conventional thinking and ideas about the way things are, push our self-imposed limits, and explore the limitless territory of what it means to be a human being on the planet at this time. Of the numerous individuals who have graced our microphones, no one has been more provocative or profoundly challenging to our current take on reality than the man known throughout the world as Jay Krishnamurti. Born in the south of India to an impoverished Indian family in May 1895, Krishnamurti was chosen at the age of 11 by Annie Besant and C.W. Leadbetter of the Theosophical Society, a worldwide and very popular spiritual group at the time, to be the next Maitreya, or world teacher. He was educated in India and later in England. After more than 20 years of schooling and preparation by the Theosophists, at a meeting in Holland in 1929, with 3,000 members in attendance, Krishnamurti stunned the audience with his pronouncement that he was repudiating the notion that he was a vehicle for leading humanity into a new age, and certainly he was not the world teacher. "Truth is a pathless land," he said. "You cannot approach it by any religion, any sect." During his lifetime, he influenced millions, and his insights continue to resonate more than a decade after his death in 1986. His words have deeply affected such notables as Dr. Jonas Salk, Aldous Huxley, Joseph Campbell, Van Morrison, Henry Miller, Deepak Chopra, and countless other students of the spiritual path, ranging from scientists and philosophers to artists and creative people of all kinds. Practical, profound, and timeless, Krishnamurti's ideas, which reject the prejudices of traditional learning and celebrate personal, spiritual freedom and the individual's quest for truth, are inspiring and relevant now more than ever. The following represents the first of two dialogues that I had the privilege of conducting with Krishnamurti. Listen deeply and enjoy. Krishnaji, welcome. You've written and spoken a great deal about meditation, and certainly in America there's a great deal of misunderstanding about meditation, and I think it might be useful for you to speak about your understanding of what meditation really is.
I think we ought to talk over first what generally meditation is supposed to be. There is the Zen Tibet meditation, there's the Buddhist meditation, there's the different kinds of Hindu meditation, and also they've introduced the Tibetan, Mahayana and Hinayana, South and North, and also all the latest gurus who have come here talking about meditation. After all, meditation, the meaning of that word is to ponder over, to think over, to be concerned, discern. It's not what we are talking about. All such forms of meditation is a kind of exercise of will, or an attempt to achieve something, a state of illumination, if you like to call it, a state of peace, state of kind of bliss and so on. Or it might be considered as a relaxation. One considers all these forms of meditation are really not meditation at all. From what we have gone into it very, very deeply with all the people concerned of various types of meditation, they ultimately, after a great deal of discussion, and they agree that Their form of meditation is really an exercise of will, effort, a sense of achievement, and so on. The word meditation is not only ponder over, think over, and so on, but the word, both in Sanskrit, means to measure. To measure and to be free of all measurement. I don't know if I make myself clear.
Yes.
To be free from comparison, from becoming. Here in this country, they have used the word mantra a great deal. The meaning of that word in Sanskrit, the root meaning of that word, is consider not becoming. Think about it. Go into it. And also, the word mantra means to to put away all self-centered activity. The depth of that statement, very few understand it. So, meditation is not separate something from daily life. If it is separate, it merely becomes an escape, a romantic imagination, and all that kind of nonsense. But real meditation is to be concerned with one's behavior, one's relationship, not only with one's own little family, but with the world. Because the human beings have created the society in which we live, which is rotten, corrupt, immoral, and all the rest of it. And meditation is a form of understanding one's relationship to the world and one's relationship to nature. So it becomes not a self-centered activity of some kind of escape from daily boredom and weariness and the general nonsense of life, but it means a tremendous inquiry in which there is no illusion, no self-deception, no imaginative theories and escapes. I hope I'm making myself clear.
Inquiry implies a goal of some type. No. What are we inquiring after?
Inquiring into the whole nature of thinking. Inquiring into the nature of why human beings are behaving this way. Inquiring into or probing into the depth of life, what it all means. If there is something beyond the ordinary, daily, monotonous, wearisome life, to inquire if there is something sacred. So, one must begin with doubt. That's one of the things in meditation. Question, inquire, probe, doubt. And not follow any particular system, because that's invented by thought, by another man. And also meditation means inquiring into the whole nature of yourself, your consciousness, and so on. It's a very complex thing, not just meditate for 20 minutes and relax and carry on with your daily, ugly, brutal life.
Well, certainly part of what you're saying is it involves us having to release the conditioning that we've all been programmed with as we've come through life.
That's right.
Is there a method to that process of releasing conditioning?
No, the moment you use the word method, it means this: a process, a system. You practice day after day till you reach something.
Like Zazen or something like that.
Which means your brain, which is already mechanical, programmed, if you follow a system, a method, you make it more mechanical, more routine, more stupid. Whereas this meditation, as you began to question, is something very, very complex, not just something you play with. It's part of your daily life.
So it's important to bring meditation into every part of one's life.
Life is meditation. Not you bring meditation. You understand, say, you have to question, doubt. In Christianity, though, that is denied. Because if you doubted the authority of the church, you were either burnt in the old days or tortured. If you really doubted the whole structure of Christian mythology and Christian doctrine, it'll non-existent. You will destroy it. Whereas one of the things in Buddhism and Hinduism is you must begin with questioning, doubt, go into it. Don't accept authority.
Can the very non-acceptance or non-believing become a belief system?
Of course, you can make it. But to question why one has belief at all, belief implies a sense of security in some form of ideal, in some form of God and so on. That's why should one have belief at all about anything? You don't believe sun rises and sunsets. You don't believe in the constellation of Orion. You don't believe London exists. It's there. Belief has really, like ideologies, have divided man. The communist ideology, the capitalist ideology, and so on. One of the divisions in the world is brought about by ideologies, by ideals, beliefs. And so there is always conflict between human beings. One of the questions is to find out if man can live without conflict. That requires tremendous probing, not just yes he can or he cannot. Why do human beings live in conflict? Why have they accepted conflict as the way of life for the last 40, 50,000 years?
Some people say it's human nature.
No. You see, that's another slogan we accept. But we have never inquired why human beings live the way we do. Why? We are always have wars. Why? Each human being in his relationship with another, intimate or otherwise, is perpetually in conflict. See, to inquire into that requires a great, not only intellectual comprehension, but it requires self-examination. Not examination according to some psychologists, whether Freud and so on, but to actually inquire into yourself. And in inquiring, one begins to discover that your consciousness, with all its reactions, after all, do you want to go into all this? Your interest in all this?
Yes.
I'm talking, I don't know if you want me to go on.
Please.
Some people don't accept, some psychologists don't accept consciousness. They say only there is action and reaction. Nothing else. Mechanical process. But if you go further into it, you see that human consciousness, which is not only action-reaction, which is mechanical, biological and psychological, you also see that human consciousness is its content, what it's made of, which is faith, belief, superstition, illusion, fear, pleasure, ideals, ideologies, my country, your country, my God and your God, all that and more, if we want to go into deep, is our consciousness, is what one is. A linguistic, psychological conditioning. Right? That's what we are. What we are is what every human being in the world is, psychologically. They suffer. They are in turmoil, uncertain, anxious, lonely, depressed, weary of this whole business of earning money, money, money. So, if you go to India or Japan, anywhere in the world, every human being goes through this. Whether black or purple or blue or whatever color they are, or whatever race they are, whether they are totalitarians or whether they are other. So, human consciousness is not my consciousness or your consciousness. It's human consciousness. I don't know.
Of which we are a part.
We are that. Not a part, we are that.
We are that.
And therefore, we are not individuals. In psychologically.
So I have to give up who I think I am.
Yeah. Who you are is merely your name, your form, or your bank account if you have one, and your passport.
Most of us become pretty identified with ourselves.
Yes.
We like ourselves, and it's kind of a fearful thing to think about giving up ourselves.
No, it's not a fearful thing. It's a factual thing. One has lived in such fanciful illusions. If I think, sir, that I am an individual free to do what I like, this is what's happening in the world. Right? Everybody wants to do what he wants to do, what he likes. And he calls that freedom, which is creating such havoc in the world. So, in questioning all this, questioning what society is being made by us. If we are in turmoil, society is in turmoil. If our house inside is burning, we create an ugly society. We are violent, we create. We have divided the world into geographically into America, Russia, and India, and Japan, and so on. So nationalities have been one of the causes of war. It is glorified tribalism. Obviously.
Well, But one might say that nationalities and the separations that are created are really out of our mind because we tend to
separate and compartmentalize. That's why you begin to inquire what is thinking, what is thought, why thought has made this society, why thought has created gods and the churches, and it's all the work of thought. I mean, there's no question about it. You can't say it's divine revelation. One can say it, but it has no validity. It's just a belief like any other belief.
So there's a direct relationship about how we between how we think and the world around us.
Yeah. So one begins to ask, if what this part of your question which you began about meditation, why thought has created this? If you grant that thought, thinking has brought about the great divisions in the world, why thought has brought about wars in the world, perpetual wars. At the beginning you kill one or two men with an arrow, now you can blast off human beings by the million. You follow where? That's what we call evolution.
We've created terms like megadeaths.
Yes, sir. So, what is thinking? Why has thinking become so extraordinarily important in the world? Technologically, you must think to create this microphone, to create the airplane, to create the submarine, to create the neutron bomb. But we have also thought and created God. God is our creation.
So as you've said once or twice, God is disorder because he's a reflection of our disorder.
Yes.
We created that God.
If you accept... It becomes so absurd, the whole thing. So we have to not only investigate what he's thinking, but also we ought to probe into the whole question of what is intelligence.
We usually associate with collecting knowledge in our brain as intelligence.
Being programmed in a certain way, using that program more cunningly. It's once you admit, sir, that thought is responsible for everything, right? Both psychologically and technologically. Thought is limited. I think all scientists would agree to that. One has talked a great deal to other scientists, they would all see this, obviously. Because knowledge is limited. There is no complete knowledge about anything, at any time, in the future or now. Perhaps you won't agree to this.
Well, when we think, we're thinking about things that have passed already.
Which means what? Knowledge. Thinking is first is the response of memory. If I have no memory, I couldn't think. Memory implies memory is stored in the memory is the response of knowledge. Knowledge is experience, right? Experience, knowledge, memory, thought. So, as knowledge is always, will always be limited, so thinking is limited. Thinking may imagine it can imagine it's illimitable, but it's still limited. I don't know if
you're suggesting that chain can be broken.
Yes. Absolutely. But that requires, huh? Not some kind of acceptance of authority. It requires examination, probing, questioning, doubting. Which very, very few people are willing to do. Because they live in false security.
Well, you know, in America, Krishnaji, there are probably more how-to books sold than any other type of book.
I know.
Everyone's looking for how-to.
How-to.
How do I do it?
Yes.
Whatever it is.
Yes.
How do I do it?
Yes. And also, the specialists are now willing to tell you how to do it.
There are lots of people out there that are willing to tell you.
Yes. If you want to have done your hair properly, you go to a specialist. How to raise a baby, how to think, what to do. So gradually, I don't know if in this country one is aware that you're all becoming slaves to specialists. How to make up your face, how to... The other day I heard the most extraordinary thing. As a woman was asking, especially how to sleep with her husband. You follow something? It's incredible.
Yes, it is. We pride ourselves about being a free people.
You see, that's what I'm questioning. So, if we could go into the question of what is thinking? Why thought has made life so utterly wearisome, cruel, bestial, for what it is now. If you once admit, not only logically, but actually, that human consciousness is not individual consciousness, it is the consciousness of all humanity. Right? That's very difficult to not only intellectually accept it, but to feel it. Then you become tremendously responsible for what you're doing.
Once you feel that.
Of course.
This concludes Side B.